Accession number 22086, Reel 6.
Colonel Shakespeare, Reel 6. You were saying that later on we became much better at using mortars, much more accurate.
Well, I think so. I ought to be. I spent 2 years teaching the Indian Army mortars.
When you were doing this attack, you mentioned this night attack, do you have any idea what sort of distance you moved over when you advanced?
Well, we must... 1,000 yards, more, 2,000 yards, 3,000. We sort of worked our way round quietly. Must have made some noise, but not enough noise for these Germans, who were only about 50 yards away. They didn't hear us. So I say we nipped up and we. We took our thing. I say we took it because there were no Germans there. We occupied. We heard the battle going on and behind us and up there. I could see that tracer and this, that, and the other. And it wasn't until the next morning. I say the next morning because at night the 18 set didn't always work terribly well. So we didn't know what had happened. It wasn't until the next morning we realised. That Charlie Company wasn't on the on their objective, and we were rather hung out to dry. However, the guns, the 4th Indian guns, we had 31st Field 105 battery, and they were very good indeed. I say, as soon as we got the OPs in and they saw the Germans coming, they were onto them very quickly.
Did the OPs come up with you during the night attack?
I didn't take an OP, no. The OP stayed with C Company. I didn't have a gun out
so
there.
So they were quite a long way back.
They were the people who didn't get there. Yes. No, I didn't have a gun at that time. No.
When you were doing your advanced contact at night like that, what sort of formation would the platoons be in? Would they be in...
Well, we were in single file.
In single file.
That was, yeah. Because we had a certain amount of forest to go through and... It was all looky-looky, as they call it, you know. Very quiet work. What I call true infiltration.
Yes. A night stealth attack by infiltration.
Hmm?
A night stealth attack by infiltration.
Yes.
Were you able to do a reconnaissance and look at the ground during the attack before you went up there?
No. Not at all. Not that one.
What about maps? Did you have decent maps of the ground?
Yes.
And information about the enemy? Did you have any?
We had overprints. Yes, we had overprints. I can't remember on that occasion where near Arezzo whether we did or not. But later on, very definitely we did. Yes, because the main when we came up against the main Gothic line, there were overprints all over. You know.
Yes. Now, when you saw the Germans coming up in their column three. Did you have any idea what sort of strength they were in?
No, it was a platoon, I suppose. But they obviously didn't know we were there. And I say, Bharti Gurung, the platoon commander, nipped out with his things and he got the guns firing, and with him, they disappeared. Literally. So we had no more trouble with the Germans. In fact, we weren't to know it.
No attempt to counterattack to push you back.
Well, not after that. Position. No. A company of the 2nd, 7th came up and didn't relieve us, but supplemented us.
So you reinforced on position.
Reinforced us in case there was an attack, but there wasn't. And then we were pulled out and went. The other side of Arezzo, I think, and I was always sort of probing and all this going on.
Going around Arezzo rather than trying to go through it.
It wasn't.
Did you ever manage to get into Arezzo itself? And
Yes, I think King George the Sixth came and took a salute. That was a bit later on.
Mm.
But we didn't do any fighting there. Though we did some to the left and yes, west and
so we're probing to the west of Arezzo.
Yeah, and we lost a company commander there.
Mm.
He made the fatal mistake of passing through me, going to some higher ground, and failing to occupy the highest bit of ground within 100 yards. The CO the next morning went up with B Company commander, the CO, he picked up Marley Clark, the C Company commander, and said, have got anyone on there? He said, no. He said, oh, God. And he marched up to the top of it, and as they got to the top, the Germans got to the other side, and they had a bit of a and all they had with them was the CO had a pistol. B Company commander had this carbine which didn't fire, and he threw it away. And young Marley Clark, the C Company commander, was hit, and coming back past me, I had to give him morphia on the way, and he died that night in the field dressing station, FDS. But classical era, the highest ground must be occupied.
Well, you have to picket it at least, don't
well,
you?
Well, within close distance, yes.
What happened to the Germans who'd encountered this?
I don't know. Party? I can't remember. I think they probably went off the other way. But no, I think Charlie Company then moved up and took it. Because they were on the wrong feature. They should have been on that feature, not that one.
Do you think they'd made this mistake because they'd attacked in the dark?
I have no idea.
Realised that they were on the lower ground?
I have no idea. I'm very surprised. Marley Clark was, you know, one of the new boys, should we say, after Casino, and no, I have no idea, because he had must have had one or two fairly clued up Gurkha officers who would have said, you know.
But it's often said that when you first arrive in an operational area, in actuarial terms, you have a very short life expectancy because you're inexperienced, and that if you can survive for a certain length of time, you start learning about hazards and how to avoid them, and you become wise to the battlefield.
Yes.
Do you have any ideas about that? How long it takes?
Yeah, I do. If you look at the casualties at our big battle at Casino, the ratio of British officers wounded or killed to Gurkha officers is far higher. I don't know, say 60%. Well, there was B Company commander, myself, the doctor and the gunner, that's four, out of some 12 officers who went in, you see, eight VAs were hit, wounded. Of the Gurkhas, far less. Mm. They're cunning old sods. I mean, they'd had 18, 20 years service. They knew a thing or two, and if they were going from A to B, it wasn't in a straight line, it was round the corner. And that was very noticeable. That's why I think that they were rather better platoon commanders, say, than a young subaltern. Must be much more experience. And subalterns didn't have a job in the battalion, even when I was commanding much later on. It was jolly difficult to give a subaltern a job unless he was a pioneer platoon commander or the mortar platoon commander or something like that.
He had to be a specialist.
Had to be a specialist. Not in a rifle company. There's no room for them.
How long did it take for a newly arrived British officer to learn the techniques of staying alive on the battlefield?
Well, quite impossible to say. Mm. Quite impossible to say.
But presumably his Gurkha officers would be advising
him. Oh, yes, to, yes, yes, yes.
On how to...
Yes, yes.
To minimise the risk.
I'm sure. Yes, most of those years... I took over A Company, and the previous company commander had come from the 4-6 Raj Riff, and he got an MC in the desert. He was a very tough egg, but he and Gurkhas just didn't quite see eye to eye for some reason. I don't know why. He was an older chap. Yes.
Perhaps the Raj puts had a different, well, different mentality.
Could have been, anyway, the CEO said to me, he said, I was adjutant, he said, right, Monty's taking over adjutant, you go and sort out A Company, what's wrong with them? Mm. There was nothing wrong with A Company, they had some absolute first class Gurkha officers. Mm. No trouble at all.
Did you have any difficulty with them when you took them?
None at all. When I was wounded at Auditori and going to San Giovanni, the senior Gurkha officer, Palman Singh Gurung, fought the battle brilliantly. Mm. Never got any recognition for it either. Put in for a American Silver Star. The rations had come to an end.
Yes. So was Auditori your next battle then after the
first encounter?
You mentioned
Arezzo, one. The next battle was, the Gothic Lion.
What happened there? How did you get yourself wounded?
Well, we had the extraordinary... extraordinary situation where rear divisional headquarters came and took over our little patch at Urbino. And he said, what the hell goes on? We were left behind, you see, 7th Brigade.
Yes.
And the same brigadier, had the Royal Sussex forward and the 11 Sikhs next.
Yes.
And we were last to go forward. Mm. As I say, rear Dick Recce party came and took over our tents and things. And he said, what goes on? And Oz's comment was, he said, your asses are far too close to the ground. And it's perfectly true. My legs are much longer than Gurkha's, and I have proved it time and again, just walking ordinarily, I can walk right the way through a company of Gurkha's because their stride is short. Mm. Anyway, we went on to I can't remember the name of the village now. I've left the maps behind too. And there we were, facing the Gothic Lion.
What did it look like when you looked forward towards it? Could you see anything?
Nothing particular. I don't have sort of attention. We were right up high, looking down, and there was Auditori. Mm. And Tavoletto on the right. And during our first night or two, we were sort of forming up and grouping. Fire Brigade was attacking across Tavoletto. And we, battalion headquarters were up here, and then I was sent forward with B Company to a little place called Santa Barbara, the church, which the Germans were, we'd sent a patrol, the Germans were occupying it, and as we moved down, our boots on the stones, they heard them, and they moved, so we spent a night there. And then the orders came, right, Auditori. That's our objective. And after Auditori, San Giovanni, which is a big feature going right up and up and up. And what's more, the brigadier gave a direct order that I would send a platoon by daylight to check Auditori, and I queried it. I think I queried it twice. I said, absolute death trap. Mm. Same brigadier, you will. Anyway, Bhakti Gurung, the chap who had done this little action, you know, with the gunners.
Yes.
Number one, two, three, two, I think. Bhakti Gurung and his boys did that. And we were in the church, Santa Barbara. This was a range of 3, 6, 9, 10, 4,000 yards, about a mile or two miles across the river. He went across the foray line and got within range of auditorium. The Germans knew he was there. There was a bit of shooting. And he then got on the radio to us in the church and got the gunners firing at auditorium, 105 battery, you know, harassing fire, I think you would call it.
Yes.
And that was working jolly well with the radio. Any time I've really heard the little radio sets working, tell you, a little 38 set working jolly well, back from him to us, back to the gunners. And then I was called back for orders for the night attack. So I disappeared and left it with Palman Singh Gurung, my 2IC, who then translated from Gurkhali to English, and the guns were sort of keeping it quiet, sort of harassing fire all day. I got my orders to move and take the village.
Was this to be a company attack?
Well, just a company attack or something bigger? I had A company.
Yes.
Under command was C company. Mm-hmm. 48 mules. And two platoons of D company, mule escort. So I had the battalion virtually.
At that time, I didn't continue.
So I went back and worked out a time and space program, and worked it out that again I've got a thing of it all written down. But C company couldn't move down from this position until last light, because otherwise the Germans had spotted them. It had taken an hour and a half to get to me, and then I could move with them, follow up, contact Bharti, find out what the hell was going on. And my plot was to, looking at the land, it was that on the left, a vineyard sort of down, a walled village with a 30-foot wall around it.
So on the left-hand side there was high ground in the village.
Very high ground.
Vines going away on the right.
And then the right. The only answer was the right. There was no other answer.
Yes.
Once you've got through the 4-0 line and the wire and the mines and without blowing anything. And that's where, of course, the brigadier was, why is there a bird? He penned the Germans back because Bharti and his platoon had gone forward.
Yes.
So one thing and another, they weren't doing what they should have done, which was patrolling out and seeing what was going on. They allowed me to come. A company, Charlie company behind, and I got behind the road went like that. But my idea was to get back, unroll, A company there, C company there, and then move forward. C company would cut the road before A company got in. That was their general idea. But
so C company would cut the line of retreat from the...
I give you a very...
Okay.
There's auditory. They come in. That's auditory, and the road, the main road, sort of went up like that to San Giovanni. It was a great big feature. And my plot was like that. Like that. And then come in that way. C company cut the road and stop anyone going that way, and I came in at the bottom edge of the village. That was the general plot.
Yes.
But...
So it's a sort of double right flank.
Well, yes, it was. That was the idea, anyway. But as D Company commander, Dennis Allrod, passed me, time and space have become such that we just didn't... You see, I had to do an attack by 3:30.
Yes.
To sort of wipe you out at 4:30, get the mules back by darkness, 48 mules. But, you know, time had gone wrong. So I said to him as he passed me, I said, right, 20 minutes from now, and this was nearer 4 o'clock, you see, when you get there, move in. And we did. Surprise was complete, but he didn't quite cut off everyone on the right.
Was that because he hadn't got the time to get far enough round to the right before?
Well, that was it. We had to move, and I said, well, 20 minutes from now, in you go.
Wasn't he was long enough.
Instead of... he was parallel to the road instead
yes,
of...
across it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I sort of leapt forward, and this was another case in point. We crept forward, and we were going through vineyards, the Bois, going like this, creeping over...
Yes.
And as we went forward, suddenly a German went bang from the village. And so I said, roared forward. Look, well, bugger all behind me.
So you were,
said,
you were assaulting the village all on your own.
I eventually got them all going. And it was just as well, because I rushed up to this bloody great wall. And there was only one way, up to a corner. There was a machine gun pointing down the thing, no one in it. Down the next one with my Tommy gun, with other people firing, another machine gun. And by the grace of God, they'd bugged off.
The Germans had gone?
Yeah. I mean, they just bloody Schmeiser would have mown us down.
Sounds as though you would have been extremely vulnerable.
Well, we were.
How far did you cover in this rush once you'd...
I don't know, 50 yards?
About 50 metres. So you got to within 50 metres.
We got fairly close, but 50, 100 yards.
How high was the wall around the village?
Oh, 30 foot at least. Very great big wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. No, by the grace of God... They didn't man their weapons. Mm. And as I say, again, it was they were jittery because I think Barty and his platoon. Mm. Anyway, we got the place all right.
What had happened to Barty and his platoon? Had they joined?
They were
final
yes,
advance?
They were my reserve then.
So they came up behind.
Yes, they came behind.
Yes.
And we sorted that out, but the Germans started, you know, shelling.
Yeah.
And van der Zorik, the mule officer in charge of the mule, got a splinter in here, and we tried to get him down, and it was impossible. There were stretchers down these vineyards, you know, these steps and things. Every time, of course, he'd slide out, and there was no way we could get him away. So we put him in the church, or in a little room there, and we got one prisoner. And I said to Funders, who he was compos mentis, you know.
Had a splinter in his chest.
Yeah. He spoke German, luckily. Mm. Found out this, that, and the other. And the telephone rang, and of course there was a German the other end. That was successful.
How did you get any information out of this German that you'd called?
Not very much, no. Nothing worth talking about.
No. Do you have any idea of how many Germans there had been in the village?
I can't remember now. Mm. Anyway, we permed up, and there was no counterattack, no physical, you know, infantry counterattack or anything, or armoured counterattack.
Mm.
But there was a lot of shelling going on, mortaring.
Yes.
So then battalion headquarters arrived, and during which time I think as they came up the next day, the battery commander John Gilbertson was killed by the odd shell coming down, which is a great loss. He's a marvellous chap.
But what was he doing so far forward? Was he just having
Well, the Secret Battalion headquarters, you see. He moved up to Auditorium. Mm-hmm. And he came forward too. Mm. And then orders for the next night, which was Charlie Company, the graveyard, as a sort of starting off point, A Company and D Company following up. I was to go and go up there, and D Company is to follow up and do that. High ground.
Would that be onto San Giovanni?
Yes, onto San Giovanni. Pity I left my bloody thing behind. I had the maps and everything. But I'll bring them next time if you want them. There again, Charlie Company got the graveyard right. This is 4 o'clock attack. Brilliant moon, full moon. 4th of September. And the road past the graveyard did that, and then up like that. And the road is the start line. There's a bit of a dip before you went up again. And I said, right, somebody shot at us from the other side. I said, go! And it was two platoons forward and Bertie's platoon in the rear. And they started to, and the chap, all the youngsters, there were four recruits, and all bunching. Oh. And I said, get out, you know. Go! And eventually they started again. Once they went, bingo, they went like hell. And so I went after them. My orders were to stay close to the radio and let everyone know what was going on. I'd argued the toss that my left-hand platoon would have to take D Company's objective. And sure enough, they were up there, going well. The right-hand platoon, the platoon commander was a sergeant or a general, I can't remember. I called him Hawaii Jahaz, which means aeroplane in Hindi, because he was fairly slow and methodical. Anyway, he disappeared with his platoon, and I came with company headquarters following. Got to one house where their company headquarters was.
The enemy company headquarters.
The enemy, something like that. And then I stalked on to find out where Hawaii Jahaz's platoon was. It had vanished with my little gunman. There was always somebody detailed to look after me, you see. A brilliant moon. And you could see, I could see the Gurkhas on the left and I could hear them. I had trained them to shoot with a Tommy gun. And the Germans were, and you could tell exactly where the battle was, but I could still hear nothing from the right hand
with your aeroplane.
So I went up to another house, and there was a little track to the right, stood on the road, which was going just about to turn right, and saying, where the hell is he? And as I turned round, I said, I'm go up and join the battle up there. Bingo. I bit the dust.
What happened?
Oh, I was a knockout in boxing. Just like wham. And I had been hit.
You had no idea what had happened?
What?
At the time, you had no idea.
No. I was KO'd. Mm. And came to seconds, minutes later, not very long. It couldn't have been more than 5 minutes. And I couldn't move. Paralyzed.
What had happened to you?
I'd been shot, I didn't know it at the time, shot through the back of the neck and out of my mouth. Bingo. Left of midline, right of midline, the doctors call it. And then I woke up. And by that, I mean I was awake, but I couldn't move. And suddenly, heat went out to my arms and my legs, and I lurched to my feet. Whether I took my Tommy gun with me or not, because I had my Tommy gun there.